Hello and welcome to Dos Monologues, hosted by Ichiruvi Erebo. Dos Monologues, also known as Dos Chronicles Audio Stories, aims to educate, inspire and drive societal change. All stories are written and narrated by Ichiruvi Erebo and all rights are reserved, including the right of reproduction in whole or part in any form. This is episode 1, titled A Goddess Story, Part 1. If you're listening on YouTube, please subscribe, like, and share. Thank you. A Goddess Story, Part 1. I am Anwuli, and I arrived at Suleja Prison at 1:35 p.m. on Friday, October 13, 2005. This date and the journey that led me to prison will always remain in my memory. I could go off on a tangent and share my story, but it would not be appropriate to do so. Not here, not now, for this isn't about me. This is about another woman, a goddess. This is a goddess story. My first meeting with a goddess was memorable, though not pleasant. I disliked her instantly. She was a young woman with a fierce temper. However, as I got to know her and heard her story, I would grow to like her and even feel pity for her. However, before I tell you more about a goddess, I would like to share with you my experience of arriving in prison. As I took in my surroundings, high walls, heavily armed men, constantly on patrol, I couldn't help but conclude that I was in a new world. I was in prison. No doubt you're wondering why, and you probably already know that I didn't come here to visit an inmate. I wish. Prison was going to be my home for the next 2 weeks. 2 weeks before my next court hearing. And hopefully bail. My heart was heavy. 2 whole weeks. Prison. The prison entrance was quiet compared to the police station I had known for the last few months, which was always rowdy and busy day and night. The correctional officer knocked methodically on the steel gate, which was then opened for us. The prosecutor handed us over to the front desk officer and the warrant officer, bidding us goodbye. As I watched him leave, knowing I wasn't free to do the same, I confronted the harsh reality of my situation, and hot tears began to roll down my cheeks. Beside me, David and Uju wailed uncontrollably. The prison officers allowed us to cry freely. We were not rushed or asked to be quiet. We could cry and wail until we had no strength left, and we did. And only then did they greet us and formally welcome us to prison. We were invited to come forward for a search. I walked on as if in a stupor. How did I, a law-abiding citizen, end up in prison? I could talk at length about my distress. I could share with you the long story of my walk to prison, despite having committed no crime. But that would not be appropriate, because, as I already said, this isn't my story, it's a goddess story. We were subjected to a thorough search, during which our money and personal belongings, including our footwear, were taken from us. Our names, along with additional personal details, were recorded in a register. Just like that, we became part of this new world. Finally, The moment we had secretly dreaded arrived, and we were led to our respective prison cells. The walk to the female cell felt quite long, and as we passed by the male cells, the male inmates both welcomed and scorned us. Upon reaching the female cell, we were welcomed by the head of the female section, the chief wardress, an older woman with a maternal demeanor, affectionately known as Mama. She welcomed us and asked us to undress. Although Uju and I felt a little self-conscious, we complied without hesitation. I had several strings of beads around my waist. She passed me a razor blade and asked me to cut them off, as they were prohibited in prison. Without saying a word, I went to work, removing the beads from my waist. Next, we were asked to trim our fingernails and toenails. After completing this task, she instructed us to lie on our backs on the bench and spread our legs wide for examination. We were not provided with a reason for this. If I felt self-conscious undressing before this total stranger, I felt even more self-conscious lying on my back with my legs spread wide for her examination. However, lacking any choice in the matter, I complied to avoid her anger. I realized that the moment I stepped through those prison gates, I had forfeited my dignity. In Nigeria, a woman rarely experiences dignity, even when she's not in prison. A woman in jail finds herself at the very bottom of the social hierarchy. Everyone disregards her. She would likely not recognize dignity, even if it confronted her directly. After a thorough check, I was asked to get off the bench, and I can't tell you how relieved I was that the embarrassing ordeal was finally over. As I got dressed, Mama proceeded to give us two rules. Rule number one, no fighting. And rule number two, which was even simpler, follow all rules while in prison. I nodded quietly, signaling that I had heard and understood. I couldn't trust myself to speak as I was on the verge of tears. After this, I was escorted to the main female cell with Uju alongside me. The gate, secured by three large padlocks, was finally opened and we entered the cell, looking around uncertainly about what to do next. I was in a daze and speechless as I gazed at everyone. There must have been at least two dozen women huddled together inside the space. A dark, dingy room with walls that had lost their color. A small high window that let in little to no sunlight. And behind me, the wide cell gate was closing as the warden secured it tightly. I was still in a daze when a woman approached me and slapped my cheek hard, jolting me out of my stupor. She asked angrily, "What do you do when entering someone's house for the first time?" I was taken aback. I couldn't hold my tears. I replied, "You greet." She slapped me again and asked me to sit on the floor. This is how I was introduced to Egodi. Now you know why I said before that I initially disliked her, but would eventually come to like her and even pity her once I heard her story. If I believed that Egodi's warm welcome signaled the hostility was over, I was still naive and failed to grasp the depths of human evil. That night, as I slept on the bare cold floor next to the cell door, a gate that kept us locked in but did nothing to keep the elements out, I felt utterly exhausted from a long day. As I drifted into sleep, another inmate, Ngozi, got out of her bed. By bed, I mean her spot on the large mattress that was infested with bed bugs. She approached where I was lying down, stood above me, and urinated on me. As I jolted awake, some of the inmates laughed and praised her. Oh my God. In utter disbelief, I stood up and examined my entire body, which was now soaked with an adult's urine. I didn't say a word, nor did I go back to sleep. Instead, I sat in the corner, awake and praying for morning to come. In the morning, Egodi learned about the incident and was displeased with Ngozi, threatening to report the matter to the prison authorities. Egodi, who was the cell president, allowed me to bathe first due to the strong odor of urine emanating from my body and the flies buzzing around me. She gave me soap to wash my clothes, and since I had nothing else to wear, she provided me with a maxi cotton gown and asked me to move to her corner. By doing this, she made it clear that I was now under her protection. After that, no one troubled me. This was how Egodi redeemed herself in my eyes. It didn't mean that I was no longer cautious of her. I was. I observed her closely every day and learned that she was highly temperamental. If she became angry with an inmate, she would instantly resort to physical confrontation. Once she got into an argument with Dorcas, another woman in the cell. Before anyone could intervene, she grabbed Dorcas by the hair, threw her to the floor, and then seized her by the throat, holding her in that position. Poor Dorcas was struggling to breathe, and it took the combined pleas of everyone in the cell to get Egodi to release her from the deadly grip. She could be friendly and caring when she chose to be, but her anger often made me think she was either possessed by a demon or deeply frustrated. When she was upset, she would speak rudely to the prison wardresses, and no one dared to challenge her. Dark and beautiful, with long dark hair always plaited with rubber thread, Egodi was an average height African queen. As the days went by, I became friendly with a few women in the cell and asked these new friends what had brought them to Suleja prison. I heard many bizarre stories. Hassana was only 16 years old and could barely speak any English. She explained that her father had married her off to a much older man. However, she loved her boyfriend and had promised to marry him, so she ran away from her husband's home to live with her boyfriend. Her father tracked her down and had her and her boyfriend arrested for her refusal to return to the older man's house. Bola was arrested by the police for wandering. The arresting officer requested sexual favors from her, and when she refused, she was transferred from the police cell to Suleja prison without being taken to court. Constance operated a shop selling alcoholic beverages and non-perishable food items to support her younger siblings. One day, some people claiming to belong to a government department stormed her shop and arrested her for selling alcohol. She had no money to bribe them, so the case went to court and she was remanded in prison. Mary had a confrontation with a neighbor and threatened to pour hot water on her if she approached her front door. The neighbor reported this threat to the police, leading to Mary's arrest. Since she had no money to bribe the police, the case was taken to court and Mary was subsequently remanded in prison. I noticed a pattern. These women had no one to turn to for help. They were in prison not necessarily because they were criminals, but because they were helpless, poor, and uneducated. It was a pitiable situation. When I inquired about our odd inmate, Ngozi, who had urinated on me, my new friends chuckled. They suggested she had a mental issue, and I thought they were probably correct. I was informed that she had stolen a police officer's uniform and used it to impersonate a policewoman. When discovered, she was arrested and brought to prison. Thus far, she had been in jail for over 7 months and nobody had visited her. My new friend said she behaved unusually, and whenever she was asked about her court hearing date, she would reply, "Don't worry, Olumba will handle that." I suspected she belonged to the Olumba confraternity. My friends claimed that even the wardresses did not understand her and believed she was enjoying prison and the free food. Deep down, I was relieved that I did not confront her when she urinated on me. After hearing all these stories, I couldn't help but wonder what a Goldie story was. Feeling bolder with her, later that day, I asked her, once we were in her corner. She shrugged and said, "I threatened to pour hot water on a dog, and here I am." I believed her at the time because of the other odd stories I had heard. There was no time to ask any more questions as a new inmate arrived with a wardress. Egodi asked her to kneel, introduce herself, and tell us why she was in prison. She told us her name was Joy, and that she sold land which was not hers, and the person who bought the land wanted his money back. She was welcomed and informed about the rules of the cell, and I handed over my chores to her and offered encouragement. She sat by the cell entrance, as I had done when I first came. Before the day was over, another inmate arrived. This one was quite pitiful and brought tears to my eyes. She was a young woman accompanied by her baby, who was less than 3 months old, and her elderly mother. The crime committed was the most bizarre I had ever heard of. She claimed that after the delivery of her baby, she was very ill, and her husband did not take care of her. When she complained, he beat her up, so she decided to move in with her mother to get help with the baby so that she could recover fully. The angry husband arrested both her and her mother, and they were imprisoned with the innocent child. The baby cried through their first night in prison, and the mother was so helpless she wept with her baby. By the next day, she felt a bit better, and some inmates vacated their spots on the mattress to allow her to relax and care for the baby. And we all took turns carrying the baby and playing with her. I didn't ask Egodi about her story again, but the night before my 2-week stay ended, she offered to share it with me. I was eager to hear what she had to say that was different from what she had already told me. She began by asking God to have mercy on her for what she had done. Then she began her story, speaking in a slightly hushed tone, so as not to wake the other women sleeping in the cell. That was part one of a Goody's story. I don't know about you, but I'm excited for part two in episode two. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of episode one of Does Monologues. Does Monologues will return next week with another episode. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave your comments and subscribe, like, and share if listening on YouTube. To contact me, please visit my website, etirivierebo.com, or email me at etirivi@etirivierebo.com. I invite all story lovers to explore my novels and novellas available on Amazon and Google Books. For audio enthusiasts, they are also available on Audible. Thank you for listening. I am your favorite storyteller, Etirivi Erebo, and I'll be here next Friday with another story.